Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games, the greatest educational video game company in the world. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars. And we have here today the greatest professional wrestler in the world, Shayna Baszler.
That's a tall order to live up to.
But you've got it. You've got it. So thank you so much for joining us. You are our first ever remote guest. So that's very exciting because we've been planning to do that technology for a while. So all of you who've been dying to be on More Than Ordinary and said, but I can't make it into Santa Monica because like I live in Belize or Florida. No, you have your opportunity. So Shayna, I'll give you just a background on the show, even though I'm going to presume that you listen to us all the time, that normally we do a couple of parts. One of them is just random ranting and interviewing our guest. So for our listeners, the two or three people living under a rock that don't know you, you want to give your background on yourself, and then I will fill in the bits that I thought you should have said.
So I was doing MMA. I've been doing MMA for about 16 years now. I grew up in a wrestling family, so that's how that all came about. And then got on The Ultimate Fighter, and that's probably how most people know me, through The Ultimate Fighter and the UFC and all that. Past couple of years, crossed over into pro wrestling and am currently doing that. And I have, right now, one of the top women's factions in the world, Wrestling for Shimmer, which is the top women's promotion, at least in the United States, probably the world. That's about all you need to know.
Well, actually, I wanted to talk about your education. So you have a college degree, yes?
Oh, yeah. I double major in religion, adolescent counseling. Actually, I never really get into this. An emphasis on cult recruitment and recovery. It really was mind-blowing to me how, like, one person could be like, hey, everyone, we're going to drink this Kool-Aid. I know it seems like we're going to die, but actually we're going to, like, transcend to this other place. And that there would be a lot of people that would be like, totally, all right. And I thought that was crazy, so I started studying things like that. That was what I, and then I minored in coaching and sports nutrition, so.
So you're, like, qualified to be a deprogrammer?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I'm qualified because it's kind of, As a standalone degree, it's kind of like nothing, but it's what I would go into where the path would lead. Yeah. Is that I would be some sort of deprogrammer or even just to help study some of that stuff to take down things that were deemed as harmful cults or something like that.
But now you're taking down other people in the wrestling ring.
Yeah, now and ruling the world. So perhaps I am a cult leader.
Yeah, you were just in Japan, right?
Yeah, I was. I spent 11 weeks over in Japan, and I was living and training and wrestling there. And for people that are not familiar with pro wrestling and your only exposure to pro wrestling is maybe the WWE, wrestling in Japan is crazy. It's its own different style. They hit each other for real. It's called stiff in pro wrestling terms, where it's very stiff looking, very hard hitting, and more realistic to some extent grappling style. I mean, like, if anybody who follows MMA knows Sakuraba, one of the best fighters of all time, he was a pro wrestler. So that style of pro wrestling can cross over to like a mixed martial arts style very easily. That's just how realistic it is. So it was great just learning a whole different style and learning a whole different culture. And
so you're not, like, pulling punches. You're really, like, fighting similar to, say, you would in a UFC fight. Is that what you're saying, like, in Japan in particular, or just even in general? I think a lot of people think that it's all scripted and none of it is real. But, you know, you hear about the injuries and all the things. So break that down for people that aren't familiar with it even at all.
So over in Japan, it's just known for being stiff. So the way I'll say it best is we're hitting each other very real, but in safe places. So where I would kick you might be, you know, rather than kicking you in the knee, it'll be up higher on the leg or something like this. And then the other thing to think about is in a fight, if someone tries to kick me in the head, I can block or move or something. But let's say there's something in a match where I know I'm supposed to turn around and the person is supposed to kick me in the head. So, like, knowing this is coming and knowing that you can't flinch or block or do anything, it's supposed to land. That's a whole different type of mental, I don't even know the word I'm looking for. It's a little bit harder in some ways.
I was going to go with insanity.
Shana, when I was younger, actually, I was not aware as much of pro wrestling. I mean, I knew I saw it, but I didn't really know very much about it. And I was broke because I was young. And a friend of mine said, oh, yeah, I should go into this wrestling. And it's great because you do judo and you can knock people down. You really like it. And so I talked to this promoter, but then he said, oh, and then it's kind of scripted. And then it's like, and this person will win or you'll win. I'm like, oh, no, fuck that. I have to win everything. No, well, no one's ever winning that's not me. So that was the end of my discussions with people in that
it's
realm.
It's interesting you say that because so it's not so much that everything is scripted. Some of the best pro wrestling matches are improv. Now, the ending might be predetermined, but when we're out there, if I have good chemistry with someone, we're not planning anything. We're able to read off each other. So it's really improv stunt work. Now, of course, if there's something like crucial to the storyline or the ending, the particular thing that ends the match might be planned out and scripted and rehearsed. But for the most part, the matches are just improv. And it's funny because people don't think about this. So I have a moment in a match where, let's say, my opponent is throwing a punch. And in that moment, I have to decide, now, does it make sense that I would allow them to land this? And then even if they land it, would it hurt me? And then if it hurts me, how would I express pain on my face? So all this needs to be decided in an instant. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And then there's a lot of, like, you brought up, someone would say, oh, yeah, this person's going to win instead of you. And you might throw a fit about that. But
I would throw a fit about that. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. Okay, so two things I'll say about that. One is that in wrestling, the story is the match. A lot of times, if you go to a really great wrestling show, or if you remember like a really great legendary match, you might not even remember the next day who won. It's the story was the rivalry. The story was, it's more about telling the story. So if it's a better story that I'm an evil villain that beats everyone up, and then the hero overcomes the odds and I lose, I appreciate the storytelling of it, right? The other side of that is, let's say I'm me, right? Like, I can beat up most of the locker room more than likely on a wrestling show just because I fought and I know how to fight and I trained for so long.
You don't just act like you can fight. You can for real fight.
Right. So if someone who I think is a crap wrestler has to win over me, I might say something about it. So this might be something I discuss before I agree to do the show. Like, listen, there's no way that, like, it would make me look bad if they were to beat me. So I don't agree. And that's something that's discussed ahead of time. There's a lot of, like, backroom things and whatnot. Or maybe they wouldn't beat me. So let's say their friend comes out with, like, a pipe that the ref doesn't see. And then, oh, then it makes sense. You know what I mean? So there's ways to make it make sense and protect yourself still. But for the most part, just cut and dry, it's a lot about the story. And while still remaining true to your character and the way you're perceived, I guess.
And so is it a different story every night? I mean, I know you go to different venues, but does it evolve? Do people come from one to another? Or does it the same show, you know, if I'm in California or South Dakota or Minnesota or wherever it is that you guys are having a show?
So each promotion will have its own storyline, basically. Now, there are promotions that work together, so that maybe the storylines will cross over from those. But for the most part, it's just about me. So I'm Shayna, the Queen of Spades Baszler. On every show, I'm the same character, but maybe I'm involved in a different story at this place as opposed to this place. So on the surface, storytelling, or what we call kayfabe, I am Shayna that travels around just to compete in wrestling. At this event, these are my friends. At this event, I hate these people. At this event, you know what I mean? So it's a continuous thing as far as me personally, my character, but the stories are different from promotion to promotion for the most part.
We'll be right back.
You can be too successful.
How so?
Our latest games have parents suggesting we get endorsements from YouTube celebrities, have professional gamers stream us on Twitch. They point out where we aren't the virtual reality level of Call of Duty.
Yet.
The point is, our games are so much more, well, game-like than the average educational games that people forget that what you really should be comparing these games to are math worksheets.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your kid sit down and do math workbooks for 20 minutes, if you can even get them to do that. Or you can let them play Fish Lake, which they'll probably ask you to let them keep playing after 20 minutes.
Or you can play yourself. You know you are never going to pick up one of those workbooks again for the rest of your life. Still, do you remember how to reduce fractions to lowest terms, multiply and divide fractions?
If not, play Fish Lake before Mia or Connor or Aiden or Joe gets home from school and asks for your help with their homework. Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm still Marie Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne-Marie DeMars. And we still have with us our amazing guest,
Shayna, the Queen of Spades Baszler.
And so, Shayna, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your education. You were talking in the first part about how you have a college degree, you studied basically to be a deprogrammer, but really, I think it seems to me a lot of your education was learning how to work with youth, right? You minored in coaching. And how has that helped you in your current career? Because you work with a lot of fans, right? A lot of them who are younger people. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like my original plan was that I wanted to be like a motivational speaker or maybe even like a high school guidance counselor. And so I think the biggest help as far as my career now is being able to get up in front of large groups of people and talk. So I went to a private school. And so to be a religion major, we had to put together, I guess, a sermon. I won't say sermon in the sense like you're going to get up in front of a church and give a sermon, but just like speeches, basically, where you're going to get up and use analogies and references and things to relate to your audience. So, and all that being said, as far as pro wrestling, you want to be able to tap into the demographic of an audience, because whether you're a bad guy or a good guy, you really want to connect with the audience on an emotional level. If the audience goes and just watches a performance, they can go to like Cirque du Soleil and just sit in an audience and watch a performance. But the thing that really separates pro wrestling from other performance arts is that the crowd is emotionally involved and invested in what's going on. And so if you as a wrestler don't know how to connect with an audience, you're really missing out on a huge part of that and a hard thing to learn, I think. So I think just learning what makes, especially with the cult studies and stuff, what makes group mindsets, what makes people, because, you know, I'm a bad guy. On most shows, I'm a heel. But what would make everybody near him, what could I do to make all of them not like me? So it's thinking about these sorts of things and that sort of psychology that's really important for what I do now.
So you were training to be the Reverend Shayna Baszler. Oh my God, fess up.
Yeah, kind of, I guess, yeah.
It sounds like, though, that what you're saying is something that I've always felt, that people who say, oh, I'm going to be a professional athlete, I don't need to go to college. But those skills you learn, like I know Rhonda is really good at math and she's super good at it. So when she's negotiating contracts and that or making investments, that she is applying those skills that she learned in school. It sounds like the public speaking skills that you learned in school or the communicating and working with people skills, that those have come into your daily life as a professional wrestler. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And then on top of that, too, not even talking about the part that you see as a pro wrestler, but there's a lot of politics, I guess, in the back where, okay, so if I'm working with a wrestler, my safety a lot of times is in the hands of the person I'm wrestling against, right? So you have to think of it like we're doing a performance together. So rather than looking at it like a UFC fight, like there's two people and they're fighting, yeah, that's what the show is about. But realistically, what it is the two of us are working together to tell a story about a fight. And so when we're putting a match together, if I don't know how to socially negotiate how a match is going to go, like how can I let my opponent, and I'm putting quotes, you can't see, but how can I sort of negotiate those waters of how we're going to let her get stuff in on me? Am I going to be really egotistical and she's not going to get anything on me? Like these types of things, learning those interpersonal relations. Like I said before, I can walk into any locker room and say, all right, if anyone wants to beat me, we're going in the ring right now. If you can do it out there, then you can do it on the show. And that would work, but then I would never get booked. No one would want to work with me. They maybe would get put in a match with me, but because they don't like me, they don't have to make me look good. So the match itself would look terrible. So even just learning how to relate to people, you know, when you talk about like cult recovery and deprogramming and stuff like this, you can't come at a person and beat them over the head with like, do you not see what's wrong? Like you want to connect with them.
This is why I never went into the clinical part of psychology, because I would be the beating them over the head person.
There is some of that. And there's a time and a place for that. But there's a popular saying that a mentor of mine said in college when I was studying this stuff. And he said, a person doesn't care about what you care about until you care about them first. And so to show respect and be able to connect with someone and so that you can both get your things in. And then the fact that your safety is dependent on them. If someone's going to kick me in the head, I have to trust that they know how to kick me in the head safely, because there's a difference between hitting someone hard and hitting someone safe. You can do both. And that sounds crazy to maybe a lot of people that haven't ever done like a combat sport or something, but...
Yeah, it doesn't sound crazy to me at all, but yeah, I know what you mean.
So I equate it to people like you that have done a sport like that. It's a lot like sparring. Like, you still want to be realistic. You still want to let them... You want to maybe show them openings to let them try stuff, but when it's all said and done, you're being totally legitimate. And you're not going easy, per se, but you're also not going fight pace. So that's kind of what wrestling is, I guess.
Before we go to the break, I want to know, when can we see you next? Are you going to be around LA anytime? Because now you've got me excited about coming to watch you.
Saturday at noon Eastern time. So that would be 9 in the morning here. There's a iPay-per-view, one of the biggest shows of the year, Shimmer Women Athletes, which is, like I said before, the top women's promotion in the U.S. All the girls right now that you're seeing, many of the girls, I should say, in the WWE, they come up through Shimmer. So Sunday's WrestleMania. It's like the wrestling event, right? It's like the Super Bowl of wrestling. So when there's WrestleMania, all the other bigger indie companies in the United States do a show. There's like a big convention. So it's a big week-long thing of everybody's best wrestling shows. And Shimmer Women Athletes is at 9 a.m. on WWN. If you guys go to the Shimmer website, all the information should be there.
Okay, well, we both know I'm not getting up at 9 a.m., so if I pay for the pay-per-view, is it something I can record on my TiVo and watch later?
I am not sure about that, but I can find out.
All right. Yeah, if you find out, we'll put it in the comments in the show. So if you're up at 9 a.m. or if you're up at noon Eastern time, you got no excuse. If you're up at 9 a.m. Pacific time, which I hear people are up at hours with a single digit in them, you can watch it then, and we'll find out about having it pre-recorded because I would like to watch it.
We'll be right back.
You know how sometimes you have an idea of how you want something done? Like how you would have your living room decorated, your closet organized, or whatever. But you just haven't had the time to get around to it because the way it is right now is passable and it works. But in the back of your head, you know it could be better someday. Well, for Spirit Lake the Game, someday is today. At 7 Generation Games, we've rolled out a major update of our very first game. We've kept the parts that were already great and enhanced those areas where we saw potential for enhancements to give you a new version of the game that we know kids will love even more than the original. If you already have Spirit Lake, check your email for the update notification. If you don't have Spirit Lake, well, what are you waiting for? Get it today. Welcome to our final segment on More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm Marie Burns-Ortiz.
I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And we still have our amazing guest.
And I, Shayna the Queen of Spades Baszler.
So, we have been talking about doing a reality show. Actually, we have someone here filming as we speak. But you did a reality show in The Ultimate Fighter. So what advice do you have for people who are considering going down that road?
The biggest piece of advice that I'll tell anyone that wants to do a reality show is to know that anything you say is recorded as a soundbite, and it can be used for any story they want to tell. There's a really famous YouTube video where someone had edited the trailer for The Shining, the horror movie The Shining, to be a romantic comedy. And it's such a good example of how you can use editing to tell whatever story you want. So just know that. And I'm sure you guys have heard Rhonda talk about it. They can only use the ammunition you give them. So just be aware. And I would say that if you're going to do a reality show, you need to ask how much control you're going to have over what stories they tell.
Yeah, we've actually gone so far to demand. So one of the things that Rhonda had taught us early on was make sure you're executive producing.
Yeah, again, they can tell whatever story they want. And so if you have no control over that, who knows what story they're telling?
Well, I think no matter how much you try to control the narrative, it's really difficult. You know, I've always said that you could have somebody running around filming Mother Teresa, and at some point she might say, oh my gosh, you know, we always have lepers. Can't we just get a common cold for once? And then it'll be in the Daily Mail under the headline, Mother Teresa Hates Lepers.
Yeah, especially I think in this day and age of social media and everything, a big lesson I learned after the show. So I got a lot of heat from the show just being a villain. I was like the villain of the season besides Rhonda. And I was naive about things still. So I would tweet something like trying to fix it. And that would get twisted, and then I would get even more hate. So then it was like, oh, I get it. No matter what I say, it's going to get turned around, so great. I'm just going to say whatever the heck I want now.
Did you develop a much tougher skin after the show based on all the, like you said, the feedback that you got? I mean, was it surprising to you, kind of that blowback that you got from people? And how did you get to the point where you're like, whatever?
Yeah, because before The Ultimate Fighter, when I was coming up, like through Invicta and stuff, I was a fan favorite. So it was weird to me that, and I guess, like, another thing that maybe isn't related to other people that are thinking about reality TV is that you forget how small the scope of your world is. So I'm involved in MMA. I train all day long. I watch videos at night. I do interviews about it. So my whole life is absorbed in MMA. And so when I went to The Ultimate Fighter, it blew my mind that nobody actually knew that I was actually a good guy. I just forgot that not everybody knew who I was. And so after my episode aired and it got crazy, they were tweeting The Ultimate Fighter and stuff. Rhonda had called me and was like, you know, here's the thing. Dana White told me nobody's episode has ever gone crazy like this. So you have to remember that this isn't bad and that this is actually how I built my career. You know, so it was like, oh, I get it. So I think thinking of it more like a pro wrestler, in the pro wrestling world, the worst insult is silent. If the crowd is very loudly booing you, that's great because they're very loudly invested in you.
It's like, wasn't it Muhammad Ali that said, if you're paying to see me win or paying to see me lose, you're still paying to see me?
Exactly.
Floyd Mayweather.
I don't think I was. You made that
I'm
up.
Just kidding.
And so MMA fans, I think, forget that if you're hating me so much that you're getting on Twitter and tweeting about me, you're getting worked, as we say in the pro wrestling world. Getting worked means getting fooled into believing the story. So I kind of would laugh at it because it's like, yeah, if you're hating me, you're still a fan. You don't even realize that.
Well, I think that's one of the things that Rhonda was worried about for us, and especially me. I don't know why, but, oh, Mom, people will say things about you and... You know, and I think she does not want to see her family get hurt, which is, I think, a very normal, you know, feeling for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling on it is I've had people saying stuff about me my whole life. And when I was competing and when Rhonda kind of blew up, I had people, you know, talking about my parenting, which is, I would say for most people, the thing that's closest to their heart. So I've had people talking shit about me for years. So that part doesn't bother me. The thing that I was warned about by Rhonda, and I think she was correct, is how intrusive it can be, because I'm making these video games, and Maria can vouch for, I want to get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are around, oh, we got to set up this shot, or we got to do this, and I just want to get things done. And she, you have no idea how you're not going to be able to just sit there and write software. They're going to come in, they're going to put lights, and they're going to want to do this. And that is true. That part of it has been making me crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, I have one last thing. Because I really want to talk about this. So you have, I think, done a lot of things that people who listen to our podcast want to do. And one of them is you kind of did a big career switch. I mean, it doesn't seem that much from the outside, but you went from MMA to pro wrestling. And right when UFC took off and women's MMA started to have some significant money, you went into pro wrestling. And you remember, you and I talked about this, and I remember when you and Rhonda were sharing a house by the beach, and I saw you watching it, and I thought, this girl loves this. Sorry, this woman loves this. I mean, it was true. I mean, I asked you some questions. You were so into it, and I told you, this is what you should be doing. I mean, I could see the way your face lit up.
So now she wants all credit given to her as we speak.
No, I want you to talk about making that change from something where just when it took off, you left and went into something else.
That's a story I tell often. That you had seen me watching pro wrestling and you had made some comment, and I'm paraphrasing, but something to the extent of like, when are you going to give up this silly fighting stuff and go follow your real dream? You were watching me and I heard you mention something, whoever it was in the kitchen or behind me or something, like, she's studying this. She's not just watching this. You could tell I had a different eye, different set of goggles on at the moment, but I'm going to say one thing that sounds really cliche and then kind of branch off into another thing. But if you don't love something, I don't know that you should waste your time doing it. I'm going to be real with you. My UFC run, I shit the bed. I had for so long, over a decade, been considered one of the top 10 in the world. And then when I kind of let the fans tell me I should be fighting for certain reasons, and so when I was fighting for those reasons and not my own, my heart wasn't in it. And so when it got to the point in fights, and I think you can really see it in my first UFC fight, I fought Betch Kohea, who Rhonda later beat up, and I smoked her the first round. And then when it was time to come out the second round and she was fighting for her life, I just didn't care enough. it was good enough for me that I had beat her the first round, and I just didn't know that it was worth it to work as hard as I would have had to, because the crowd already hated me, and I'd worked so long and been written off that why, I don't know, it just at the time it didn't seem worth it to me. You can't think of a career change like you're stopping one thing and going to another, because everything is equity. Everything you're doing, even if you think what you're doing right now is the final thing you're doing, it's all equity. So what are you building for yourself to improve your value to whatever it is you're doing? And I think that's what you have to look at is, okay, let's say you're a teacher and you want to get into...
If you want to get into selling educational games, call us up.
Yeah, okay. So let's say you're a teacher and you want to get into educational games and get more involved with that and not be a classroom teacher anymore. So what about your teaching and the skill set you have learned helps sell you to be valuable in that other industry? And there's everything. And we talked about even a college education. If you look at my college education, religion and adolescent counseling and all that, if you look at that and then be like, wow, she's a professional wrestler, that doesn't even make sense. But I can sit here and we just had a conversation about, well, here are the things that really helped me in the career that I did choose. So everything is equity. And to always remember that is going to make a transition into whatever you want to do really smooth. And a little disclaimer, when I say you shouldn't do anything if you don't love it, I don't mean there aren't parts of a job that you hate that you shouldn't do. Like if it sucks, you shouldn't do it. Because there are parts of a job that suck, right? I have to get up every day, twice a day and work out and eat right. And that's not fun. But when I get out there and it pays off, that's what it's for. So I'm not saying by any means, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. But just know what you love and then know your equity.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.